Welcome to the Mastery Podcast with your host, Mark Coles. I've dedicated the last 23 years as a fitness professional to mastering my mind, my craft, and my business. It is my passion and mission to help each of you to do the same. Over the coming episodes, I will be providing you with all the necessary tools to be able to take full control of your career and your life. I'm really looking forward to going on this very exciting journey with you, so let's get started. What's up, guys, and welcome back to the Mastery Podcast. I'm here in Dubai, and I've managed to track down Cal.
Sound like a criminal.
Yeah, well, you've just told me you've been in 22 different countries.
Yeah,
so
I'm not a secret agent, I swear.
You're not a secret agent, but I'm, honestly, Cal, for those of you listening and watching that don't know our relationship, we go back quite a long while.
Mm.
Cal and I worked together at M10, and now you are one of the world's top prep coaches, which is just staggering. And when I knew you were coming over, I was like, look, you and me haven't done a podcast.
Yeah.
We haven't had a chat properly. We saw each other at the Arnolds, didn't we, a couple of years ago.
Bits and bobs.
Yeah. But what better way to have that chat than in front of everybody else?
Yeah, yeah.
And let the world to hear, because I'll say this to you right now. I'm so proud of you without being patronizing to you, because to just see how things have unfolded, and we'll talk plenty in this episode. My intention for today, really, and you know, in my heart and my soul, I'm a coach.
Yeah.
And I care massively about people being the best that they can be.
Mm.
And I have moved into the business space.
Yeah.
And I teach a lot of business, but one of the biggest reasons people don't get better is because they don't build a business because they're not a great coach.
Yeah.
So I want to touch on that today and really get your thoughts on that. But for those listening and watching the podcast, Cal, take us back. For coaches that don't, they will know you, but for coaches don't know your kind of coaching journey.
Yeah.
Where did it start from, and how did you and I end up meeting?
So I think I join in 2014?
Wow.
It was the year that Danny Fox left.
I joined
just after Danny Fox left, I think. Oh no, Danny was there. It was who
was
just
the left? Danny.
Who went to UP?
Reed.
It was just after Reed had left. Danny was there for a little bit.
Very much so.
So my M10 was where it all started. So I was a PT in LA Fitness for a year.
Yeah.
And then I moved to a gym called, it was called The Gym previously. It wasn't the chain, but they changed the name to Halo Gym when The Gym ended up moving into the same area. And then I did that for a couple of years, got prepped by James for a photo shoot, came up to the physique camps twice, I think. Stayed at that Britannia Hotel.
Cracking hotel.
Which was, with the room we stayed in was right beside the boiler, so it's like 900 degrees.
That's their best room.
It's like going back in time. And
You want the ensuite? You want the suite?
Yeah. And then I applied for that job, and then basically we moved everything back up to Nottingham. So that was basically going from like a full client base to zero. I still remember that interview I had in your office with you and James when I had to prepare those three case studies.
I remember. And do you know what? I mean, there's such a trend in coaches that I know who have gone on and done great things is being prepared to say, fuck it, and relocate and do something big.
Mm.
Like, a lot of coaches might just think, well, it's just normal for someone like Cal to go and do that.
Mm.
That's a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
That was what I'd built over 3 years and a full client base. You know, I still had an ambition to take that further, but I didn't feel that was the environment that would allow me to do so. Because Tunbridge Wells is a very compact place in terms of everyone knows everyone. The gym wasn't that big. And don't get me wrong, you could do very well there, but I think the physique element, the coaching element at M10, and what I saw on the social media, what I saw, you know, with James and what I saw with you guys doing, that was what I wanted to tap into. So I remember I wasn't going to actually accept the job. I wasn't going to apply, and then Hannah made me apply, and then I ended up getting an interview, and then I came up, and you took the piss out of me for my jeans being too tight. Remember that?
And then years later, we're all in them.
Yeah. That was the start. That was
and that relocation for you, I think it's an important point because a lot of people aren't prepared to relocate, but their instincts telling them something has got to change.
Yeah.
To a younger coach who is in Tunbridge Wells-ish or somewhere similar,
yeah,
who's on the edge of that, this is a great opportunity for you who's relocated and now traveling all around the world to just share your advice as to what would you do in a situation where you feel that you're maybe the biggest fish in your pond right now.
I think it's a challenge, isn't it? When you get to a point where it's like, I just felt like I got to a point in that gym where I wasn't the only one doing it, but I was the only one doing what I was doing in terms of like the physique coaching element, because I took the M10 stuff and I basically took it into that gym. Mm-hmm. So I was the only one training that way. I was the only one, you know, coaching that way and wanted to get those results. But then you get to a point where there's a little bit of a ceiling in regards to progression. And then I was a little bit scared that what I saw in that M10 realm seemed a little bit unattainable, because I was like, surely I'm not good enough to do that. But then you're also on the flip side, you're in a position where it's like, I don't want to be bottlenecked in terms of what I can achieve by just staying here and being comfortable all the time. So that M10 environment was a case of like throwing myself in the deep end, in the lion's den, so to speak, and just challenging myself.
And as a younger coach, I know a lot of people look at you right now and rightly so, look up to you for what you've achieved.
Mm.
But we always have that thing at M10 back in the day where you come in and you're looking up straight away and it's daunting.
Yeah.
How advantageous is it for anybody to be in that position where there is people?
I think it's essential. Above. That's the only thing that gets you to be in a position where you get better.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, the team meeting on a Thursday or a Tuesday or whatever we had, the team meeting where we had to present something to the group or we had to take ownership over client case studies or whatever it might be. And even teaching on the camps and educating on the physique camps was a big one, because when you had to present stuff to other people and those other coaches listening to you, that was something that really made you, you know, I need to know this stuff if I'm going to teach it and say it in front of a group. So that was something that forced me out of that comfort zone as well. So.
And what about your weakness? Like back then when you came across, there's always a little bit that we either, you know, fake it till we make it kind of thing, or lag our way through a little bit, you know. What were the bits that you thought, right, I hope they don't see the chink in my armor here, but this is the stuff I'm shitting myself about?
Yeah, I think even just general coaching ability, when you go from a smaller gym into that environment, there's obviously a coaching expectation in terms of what you need to know. And, you know, I never did biosig. I never did those, you know, initial courses that people in that environment were known for. So in my position, I was like, you know, I'd never even used a set of calipers before I went to M10. And then that was where, you know, somebody showed me how to do it and you learn the systems. I remember when everyone used to have the biosignature software and I was using like just my own Excel sheets. So little things like that where it's like, maybe I should, you know, get this stuff before I then enter that environment. But you just learn as you go. Like the consult comes in and you go into that assessment room and they're like, look, I'm postnatal. And I'm like, yeah, I'm a postnatal expert, so you're in the right place.
You just have to just
go with it. Go home, go on Google.
But this is it, right? Because, you know, I remember you went heavily into your data and analysis. Mm. And there's these kind of two schools of thought with coaches. They come out of a PT qualification. They do maybe one entry, you know, extra level of course.
Mm.
Done.
Out of your
hands.
Yeah.
Right? And then you're trying to tell people, you've not. You've only scratched the surface of what's possible.
Yeah.
And then you start going down the realms of all the extra stuff that you were studying, all the stuff that we were trying to teach. And you see this big gap in the fitness industry where you have the people that like came to your seminar over the weekend. They're just thirsty for more.
Yeah.
And then this gap with the people that just aren't prepared to do more because they think, how much of a difference between what I know now and learning that extra bit that's tough.
Yeah.
How much of a difference does it actually make to coaching?
I think if you don't spend time in those challenging environments, though, you never really know. Because if I stayed in Tunbridge Wells, you don't know what you don't know in that scenario.
The naivety side of it.
So when you go to RTS or when you go to a muscle nerd seminar, you're suddenly in a position where it's like, actually, I don't know that much. Because Luke Lehman's in front of you lecturing and you're like, oh, maybe I should know this stuff.
Do you think they're frightened of actually being exposed 100%, and not knowing stuff?
Because you get asked a question by Luke Lehman and he'll throw a ball pen at you and be like, what's the answer?
Yeah,
and you're stuck there thinking, I don't know what to say.
Or back in the day with Charles Pollock, when I remember,
yeah,
the guy stands up to go to the loo, and Charles said, "What are you writing?"
Yeah,
you? And the guy was like, work on your calves. And the calves guy was like, I just got a question wrong.
Yeah.
I wanted to go to the loo.
I remember the first RTS course I went on, in it was in Urban Gym in London. I can't remember what area of London. But I remember Michael Goulden, everyone that was in the group would get given a sticky piece of paper they had to put on the board. And you would be like, draw this attachment to this muscle or draw this joint structure. And he'd just give you a random muscle. And then like, you're waiting for your name to be called out. You're like, Jesus, what's he going to say? What's he going to say? And the first one you do it, you're kind of like just drawing random squiggles, and then you just get better over time.
But as a coach who is, see, that's my fear. You know, they're saying, that's my fear. Constantly, you know, even now, I'm sure that there are environments you're in and want them. I'm sure you want more of them. You know, I study stuff with what I'm doing all the time. I'm going, I didn't know that. I need to know more of that. And there's a lot of coaches that are at the position where they don't know anything right now.
Mm.
But that whole idea of being in the fitness industry, and is my whole career going to be one where I'm constantly supposed to challenge myself?
Yeah. I think this becomes something you almost get comfortable with and almost seek as well. Because like now it's like, if I see an opportunity to challenge myself, I go towards it as opposed to running from it, because I know that for the first 2 or 3 years, there's an immediate connection being built between like, right, if I actually put myself in that environment, I have the self-belief and confidence in myself now that I can probably get myself through it. And if I can get myself through it, then I become better on the other side.
But you had that. You and I both had that same opportunity as the trainers that are sitting here now going, I just don't think I've got the confidence to put myself in that environment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What makes you different to them, though?
You just have to take the leap, haven't you?
Was it something around you, family-wise, friends-wise?
You've got to have a support network. You've got to, you know, Hannah in my ear at home when I got back home saying, no, you should do it, you should do it, you should continue to pursue it, stuff like that.
But part of you was saying no.
Yeah.
Even with the M10.
I was normally like, the one that would say no.
So would you actually, because you were quite a quiet head
then.
So, you know, I'm just looking for these younger coaches that are there going, I know there's so much for me to learn, but I haven't got that push.
Yeah.
Would it be going to a course? Would it be hiring a coach?
I think James was probably a catalyst in that, in regards to exposing myself to that and exposing myself to the coaching and holding yourself to a higher standard. And, you know, the discipline that comes from even just your own physique development and putting in what the work that needs to be done in regards to how you're going to take yourself moving forwards individually and what you learn there in terms of discipline and work ethic. But
well, we remember the transformation photo.
Oh, yeah. We had many leg days together.
We had a lot.
In the leggings.
Do you know what? We're only talking. Guess what I was listening to the other day?
Go on.
AC/DC.
Oh, yeah.
Thundershot.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still there with Rage Against the Machine killing in the name of.
Yeah.
But have a leg day. And do you know what? I want to stay on this a lot because you love burying yourself.
Yeah.
And it's something that Jordan and I were messaging each other the other day, and he was just like, I need to get back into burying myself.
Mm.
It's like, it's there. Mm. Now, I know burying yourself is an extreme kind of side of training, but you know, I still say to this day that a younger coach that's not really excelling and pushing themselves physically, because some of my best training days were in that gym where we just had the music on loud, we were training heavy, training hard, but that helped me become a better coach. It helped me become a better leader. It helked me challenge myself.
Yeah.
Like, talk us through your own body progression, because not only have you put a hell of a lot of tissue on, but how's that helped you coaching?
I think going through that process gives a certain level of authority when you can kind of, the whole notion of like walk the walk in regards to, if you've done it yourself and you've experienced that and you've experienced the challenges that you're met with on that process, then you can also speak from a tone of more authority when you're actually speaking to people that will actually listen now, because it's like, actually, he's done it. He has the context behind it. And then the next step on top of that in terms of the progression is, he's not only done it himself, but he's also coached these people who have also done it. Mm-hmm. And then once you're at that point, it's like, what you say is taken as the truth, and people will listen. But I think that's self-challenge is, it just goes part and parcel with what you're doing with coaching, what you're doing with business. It's like always just constantly seeking progression, and you're going to get certain people who thrive off that, and you're going to get certain people who cower away.
And I think at the end of the day, the cowering away side of stuff, what's your thoughts on this? Certain people should be coaches.
Mm.
And certain people shouldn't be coaches.
Yeah.
Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah. Like I always refer back to the, when we were looking at, back in the M10 days, when back in the M10 days. It makes me sound like 70 years old.
It was a while ago.
It was a while.
10 years this year.
Yeah. Is it 10 years?
10 years anniversary, October this year. Wow. Like, just gone.
Sorry. In those circles, when we were meeting these coaches, when people were coming and learning from us and all this stuff, if you got, you know, social media now, a name will pop up and you're like, I remember them. And you'll just click on it and you'll be like, what are they up to now? And some of those names, there's, you know, you go on it and the traction in that whatever 10-year time frame it might be doesn't reflect what the initial objective was for them as individuals. Mm-hmm. And I think some people are going to thrive in that environment, but it takes confrontation, it takes challenge, and some people will struggle. And that might just be a representation over, you know, the risk they're willing to take in regards to, you know, work versus reward, or being in a position where you're willing to work relentlessly and it not materializing for a long period of time, and then it suddenly starts to build momentum. Like I know I've been in that position before where I've seen, you know, people that I talk to where it's like, you know, I might have mentored them N10 10 years ago, yeah, and their goal was to be in this position and they haven't quite got there yet and they're still on that path. And there must be a reason why, because everyone's got the same opportunity at the end of the day.
Yeah,
so there must be a reason why that level of scaling or acceleration in knowledge or results or growth has not happened in that time frame. Because 10 years is a long time.
Yeah, and we see that. I mean, people that have been on the mentorship, people that have been even through our business coaching, and they're like, I'll be there. I mean, your name is brought up very frequently from the coaches that we work with from a business perspective. And there's a lot of pain inside people when they look at one other person's journey and say, I'll be there. And I'm like, hold on a minute. Like, that's Callum's journey.
Mm.
That's Callum's 22 countries he wants to visit. That's Callum's wanting to be one of the world's best prep coaches. However, when somebody sets an unrealistic goal, to me, that brings unfulfillment because you're chasing Cal Raystrick's journey.
Yeah.
And I think personally, I think sometimes the challenge is people don't get there because they set your goal rather than their own goal.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they're trying to do the things you've done. I did, and I'll tell you when I did it, Poliquin.
Yeah.
I started Charles Poliquin, came back and started beasting everybody in the gym. The way that Charles used to say, look, if you don't want to be here, you don't want to be here. I was like, I'm talking to a 55-year-old woman.
Mm.
And for 6 months, I came back as him and didn't apply the thought process that I needed to at Gempot clients.
Yeah.
And that was a real unsettling moment for me because I then suddenly had to have a grounding.
Yeah.
You know, these people that are taking a long, long time to get, going back to what I was saying about should some people be coaches, based on what you've just said, does that mean that yes, you should be a coach, but align yourself with a goal and take your time? Or
I think that one of the unique things, and this is like something that gets brought up in podcasts all the time, or people ask questions, whether it's, you know, we're doing a Q&A or podcast is a big one, but one of the big things that I can hold my hand up and admit is I never set goals. In regards, like, I never set a 3 or a 5 year plan. I've never done that in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've always been told you should do it, but I've never done it because I've always focused on that day or what I've got tomorrow. And I was like that at M10. And I think one of the reasons, like, you know, the other analogy is to look at the within this industry and within the coaching industry. I'm sure you'll see this with your mentorship as well. The people that come to you that are relatively, you know, they're not the full refined version of themselves in terms of coaches and skill set, but the people that come to you maybe 1, 2, 3 years into their journey and they say, I want to be there, and they put all their eggs in the mentorship basket of learning business, learning, you know, email marketing, whatever it might be, but then the actual coaching element, who they are as people, is not developed.
Yeah,
that's the biggest thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, what you've just said then to me, I teach business, but since the age of 25, I've been teaching personal development and actually going through the journey myself.
Mm.
And when you actually see a coach and the first thing they do is to come into a business program and they go, I want more clients.
Yeah.
And you and I'll get into this in a second because, you know, I talk about clients and I'm going to say this stat right now. You know, there's going to be a lot of coaches that will be like, you know, we talked about this a second ago. This year, you've had 112 class wins, 178 class top threes, 40 overall wins, 13 IPB pro cards, PNBA 2 pro cards, 1 PCA, and 3 Olympians.
Mm.
Which, considering 2 years ago, was that a trajectory? This is a guy that's just absolutely obsessed with results.
Mm.
Go back to what your previous statement was. Say what your thoughts are on this. We didn't have really social media when you started. Well, I'd say you did.
A little bit.
Just I'd say a fraction. It'd been going a while. No one was as aggressive on it
no,
or focusing as much time and effort. But what we've got is a coach that's not necessarily prepared to do the longer work. Whether or not you agree whether social media is changing the space and time horizon that people think it's going to take to get somewhere, and because you see everybody every day. I mean, look, we'll talk about your time and your journey, but the coach right now who wants to do the business, the marketing, the lead gen and everything, what are we marketing? We're marketing results.
Yeah.
We're marketing the product. You know, you're not going to sell a Chanel handbag unless you've got a Chanel handbag to sell.
Yeah.
And so essentially you're going out there for a campaign for Chanel, but you don't have a finished, it's a prototype.
Yeah.
So the point is everybody's trying to market a prototype because there's no proof in the product, but to create the product, I mean, just give us a realistic opinion from your first transformation to these Olympians. How long?
10 years. Yeah.
Who wants to wait 10 years?
And the irony is, in that regard, I've only, and this is genuine as well, I've only started paying attention to the actual business side of what I do probably in the last 6 to 8 months, since 2022. Because I've got to a point where it's like, well, I've obsessed about the coaching side and the results side for 10 years now, and I've got to where I am, which is great. But then it's like, if I want to use this and you know, encapsulate that in terms of the growth that we've had, but then leverage that moving forwards and scale, there's so many things here that I haven't addressed from a business perspective, logistics and like what the back end stuff should be. And if I'd have done that and fixated on that 10 years ago and only focused on that, then
you wouldn't have.
I wouldn't be in the position I am. But then it's like, I'm now in a position where it's like, right, well, the product and the proof of, you know, the proof of results and the skill set's there. And now it's like, right, now what we can do, what can we do to get to where we need to be in the next 10 years? And also, you know, in the back of my mind now, you know, I'm 30 now, I'm in a position where it's like, well, I can't work at this capacity for the next 20 years and be 50 and still working like this. So I need to be in a position where there's some form of long-term plan.
Well, the logic is interesting, right? Because there's me and you. I did 15 years on the gym floor and very proud to have my work in Flex, Muscle and Fitness, had it all over the place. But like you, I look at it sometimes and people say, do you feel you wasted 15 years? And I went, I'd do it again.
Yeah.
I'd do 23 years again, Cal, which is this year, in this industry, and I'd have done exactly the same.
Yeah.
If you told me you could create a product and sell it online faster than you could to learn how to be a coach. See, my void being young, I wasn't very intelligent, and I wasn't recognized for anything growing up. Like, I didn't have a talent or a skill. When I played rugby, when I scored a try, I was like over the moon. With your physique, when you look at a photo, a transformation, you're like, wow. It gave me fulfillment to achieve something, which a lot of coaches don't have that fulfillment. They don't. They're looking for something, and they shoot for the. And look, I'm a business coach. My business coaching program is the result.
Yeah.
Of 15 years of the results. So like right now, you're scaling that aspect of, you know, the athletes and everything that you've got. So how do we address, with your experience and your knowledge, this 6 to 8 year journey that people aren't prepared to wait for, yet they want what you've got?
Yeah. I guess that's why there's you know, not everyone is in a position where they can go to that level and that length of time, because, you know, I think probably one of the big things for me is, and you know, you can rein this back all the way back to those days when we were training in the gym with, like, you know, Josh was there, and, you know, we're all training at the same time on in those afternoons or lunch times. It's like, you're doing it because you love it as well, and then because of your passion for it, you get good at it, and then because you get good at it, you know, things start to come from it.
And do you think there's quite a few people coming into the fitness industry because they like the what other people have got, rather than the love for the coaching?
Yeah, like, you know, this weekend I probably slept 2 hours a night for the last 4 days, because we've finished the seminars at 3 o'clock. I've trained at Dungeon Gym. I've got back. We've gone to dinner. Then I've done my check-ins from 10 till 4:30 a.m. And then we've got to start a seminar in 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Somebody that didn't love the job wouldn't do that.
No.
But it's like, I wake up in the morning, I'm tired, but it's like, well, it's just what I do.
And do you know what's quite funny there? Because I always talk to coaches, this whole burnout theory.
Yeah, I've been burning out for the last 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But there's got this burnout, right? And I remember listening to John D. Martini talking a lot about, and I talked about this in one of the podcasts that we put out recently. Distress is where you're doing stuff you're not happy with, but eustress is you'll just keep on going.
Yeah.
Now you do need to sleep a little bit.
Yeah.
But you've just got a little buzz inside.
Yeah.
Like this inspirational energy.
Yeah.
You can relate to that, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
It feeds you. It just keeps you going, and it's the difference between being inspired by what you do or feeling that you've got to do what you do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the whole notion of like when you go home and your mum's like, hey, you should really slow down and stop doing as much. But
so one of your videos lifting too much.
You know, you need to sleep more, you need to do this, you need to travel less. But then it's like it's very hard to resonate, or it's very hard for them to see your viewpoint when you're not in those shoes and when you don't have the, you know, a little bit of drive and competitiveness. And a lot of mine is like, I'm really competitive, and for those results that you saw there, it's because, you know, I spoke about this on the podcast the other day, where it was like 2 or 3 years ago, I'd go to a show just for my client to compete at a show and me take a photo at the end with a thumbs up. They might not have placed, it wasn't the goal to place, it was just I had a client on stage who was in good shape. And then it started going to, I need a client in that first call out. And then it started going to, I need a client in the top three. And now we're at a position where it's like, if a client doesn't win, I'm really disappointed. But then that scale of like your expectation and what your standard is also reflects within that stuff as well.
Do you measure your, obviously you can see these results now, but has this been a course of measuring as you've gone through your journey?
What do you mean?
Just looking at, you know, I always call it like, what's your calling card? Right? When we were back at M10, it was like, what's that one that you're going to put on your social media and say, that's my standard?
Yeah.
Did you measure those standards? Go, okay, that's the transformation. That's the transformation where it's a photo shoot in the assessment room. Now we want a photo shoot that's going to be in a Bailey's studio, for example.
Yeah.
Now we want somebody that's gone to stage.
Yeah, 100%.
Now you talked about, and I've written this down here, you know, I remember somebody who writes, I write my visions. And that's how I operate. And I remember you did a podcast with James and you were asked the question and somebody sent it to me because it was at the same time I released, I think the same day I released a video which was talking about how I vision plan.
Right.
So somebody sends me a snapshot and goes, Callum doesn't agree with you. I'm like, well, Callum is entitled to his own opinion.
Yeah.
You know what people are like.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wanted to ask you that then because people either have a conscious or a subconscious destination. The conscious one is, for me, I bring it down, bring it to reality and actually start mapping out how I want to get there.
Yeah.
And it's been a conscious plan of mine for a long time to do that.
Mm.
But internally from you, the map's been drawn out or else you wouldn't be here where you are today.
Yeah.
Which way, other than writing it down and actually speaking it to yourself, do you feel that you've vision planned in Cal's way? Because something has been put, I mean, I could exactly tell you.
Mm.
You were a cut above the rest in terms of what your expectations for you as a coach. We now today at M10 don't have the level of attention to how many hours, because online's come in and coaching's changed. But you know, with us, we're in the gym from 6 in the morning till 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And then some.
Yeah.
And we train Saturdays.
Yeah.
And the landscape of personal training is changing in a bit because people have a bit of online coaching and it changes. But my question to you is that vision plan that you say isn't there. I wanted to have a conversation with you about the fact that I know it was there, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But what have you done that's not written down, that's kind of given you the direction that said, right, go there, do that, go there?
I think the vision plan for me was like, it was definitely a conscious thing in regards to what I wanted to, once I got the first glimpse of it at M10 and you got the first transformation or you got, you know, your first competitor client and then your first competitor client wins, like you just feed off that and want to set those standards higher and higher and higher. I think the biggest thing for me was the fact that I then had a direct correlation over how hard I worked and how long I worked for with more things starting to go my way. And as a result of me then going, right, I'm going to just take on more opportunities and make sure I nail each one of those opportunities over time just get, you know, more and more progressive in terms of the caliber of the individual and the athlete, for example. So it might be gen pop at the start. And then it's like, right, well, there's a correlation here between the more gen pop transformations I do, I start to get these guys that are in good shape. And then it's like, right, you start to get some really good transformations at M10 because they've got some potential. And then those transformations turn into competitors and those competitors then turn into higher standard competitors. And then, you know, MVC and then IFBB and then Olympia. So I think the correlation for me was I've never been someone to write down goals because, you know, the whole note, and this is probably maybe a little bit of an error on my part, but it's like, if I write it down, then I set myself to that. When it's like, if you told me a year ago, I was going to be coaching 3 people at the Olympia, I wouldn't even believe you. I'd be like, nah, don't be silly.
But on that, there was, because, and this is what, because I've known you.
Yeah.
When you got Gen Pop results,
yeah, yeah.
Like, this is an interesting point just to hold on for a second.
Mm.
You had to train a lot of Gen Pop people to get your first body transformation. I think yeah. people underestimate that. They think they've got to just suddenly move into being a body transformation coach.
Yeah.
Your first body transformation clients come from Gen Pop.
Yeah.
And you got to do a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Before you get your first body transformation client.
Yeah.
But when you did your first body transformation client, or your first Gen Pop that ended up being a body transformation, it's at that point you changed the goal post.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is goal setting. Yeah. Like for me, because you went, right, I've done that. So you must then, because your goal 2 years ago was not to be get three at Olympia this year.
Yeah.
But you surely said, no, I've got to do better than I did last time.
Yeah, and it's the same this year. Like I see those numbers and it's like, right, well, we need to set up the calendar for the athletes in a way that's going to allow me to surpass that. Or I need to get more athletes in on the team to then get more results than that. Or I need to, you know, even down to the intricacies of like, if I've got people on stage last year that have done these shows, then I need to pick the right timeframes of the year to then be in a position where they go before the Olympia cutoff, or I need to pick these specific shows across the calendar because I know who's judging that. And I know who's going to be rewarded with the eyes that are on them. So like that time, that is probably my way of
goal setting. See, the funny thing is, I think a lot of people go, by 2024, I will have X, Y, Z.
Mm.
But then on the flip side of that, it's like, okay, cool. But if I set that goal of having six at the Olympia next year, that's unrealistic for me. What I can do is say, well, I got three. I have to be able to get at least this, this, this. So you're kind of mapping out.
Yeah, I from a coaching perspective, I'm the most goal-driven timeline, reverse engineer all the way back to day one person you'll ever meet.
Because, and this is interesting, right? For years, Cal, I wouldn't have looked at a figure on a bank on a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Up until 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, as my values change, and this is what I hoped we would get to on this.
Yeah.
The thing you goal set about is the thing you value the most.
Yeah.
And Jordan, I remember having a big conversation with him. Jordan wanted to be the biggest bodybuilder and strongest in the country for himself.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, built a membership site, supplement range, clothing range, athletes yeah. all over the world.
Yeah.
And made a lot of money.
Yeah.
But none of the goal was money.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is, this is quite an interesting conversation for us to both have because... Yeah, yeah. My goal throughout the first 15 years of my career, I couldn't give a shit about money.
Yeah.
You, what about you?
But that's why I said it on that podcast, because I presume they meant goal setting yeah, as in financial growth.
Yeah. And that's why, because I listened to that bit, because immediately we talk about business. It's like, what goals do you set? And if you actually look at it, we are the most inspired, driven, motivated, and proactive doing the things that we love to do the most.
Yeah.
It's no wonder that you've coached all these people, because the only thing you focus on is the thing that you love. And to me, if you want to make a lot of money, don't deviate and try and make money. Sorry, if you want to have a great yeah. career and you are loving coaching right now, my opinion is that a lot of people go and start chasing money and leave the coaching behind.
Yeah.
When in all fairness, the thing that they love is the coaching. And what I'm loving listening to you today about is you're financially stable. You're investing, doing things that you're doing, reinvesting into the business, whatever, traveling all over the world, this influencer kind of lifestyle that everybody would kind of want without chasing money.
Yeah, because I just know now that it's like, and I don't like focusing on it. I don't like knowing. I have to know because of like what we're doing with, you know, silly things like tax and, you know, paying people on the team and stuff like that. I need to know the ins and outs of what's going on a spreadsheet, but the more I focus on it, the more I just want to focus on the actual product and the business itself.
It's because, pulling you back to the thing that you love.
Because it's like you just start to lose your values. And also, I think the biggest thing is just understand that if you progress as a coach individually, that side just grows by default.
Yeah.
And you're probably going to get to a point now, you know, we're at this point now where it's like, right, well, let's start being a little bit more savvy in terms of like maximizing what we can do with different things, because I spent the last 10 years not blinking an eye at that and not focusing on it.
Yeah.
And it's like where I can invest in that individual to help me do that. But, you know, the first decade of that was just focused on becoming a better coach, because I knew even from the M10 days, like when we used to get that pay slip at the end of the month, it's like, if I become a better coach and work with these people and get more results, it goes up anyway. So I never have to worry about
it. Yeah. Well, do you know what? I'm trying to write a post at the moment without getting it wrong. And I could probably get across a couple of it in this episode by saying to you that I couldn't have told you that there was a recession in 2007.
Mm.
you're probably the same.
Mm.
I couldn't have told you what struggles people were going through.
Yeah.
Because I increased my fees. I had a full diary.
Yeah.
I built a gym. I got results because you had something that people wanted. And in my opinion, if you want to recession-proof yourself, you have the ability within you to be a commodity that people want, because I'm sure you sometimes can't handle the workload with the amount of people that want to work with you.
Yeah, like even through...
And how are things right now with it being a recession?
We've got 7 people on the team. We've got 7 people working for us. And that's like, there's 7 coaches that my second goal now as an individual, as a businessman, I don't even like saying the word businessman. It's horrible.
You should have been wearing suits.
My second goal as a coach is, you know, in that cascade of, right, I want to work with pro coaches. It's like, well, I can only work with a certain amount of people.
Yeah.
And I've over exceeded that number in the past and that threshold, and you pay the price for it because the standards of your service go down, your time response goes down, et cetera. And that's something you need to learn your own individual barriers with. But you're now in a position where I need to make those 7 individuals now all thrive in the same way and all get the footfall they need to work with the clients they need to work with. And like, even when COVID was announced, and I remember that interview, that announcement with Boris that went on, was like, right, it's going to be 2 weeks or 4 weeks circuit break or whatever it was, and it ended up being 8 months or something. And in that time frame, we didn't stop growing. Like, the growth continued, because the next day we were, you know, I was in my garage filming workout videos and writing plans for everyone on the team, or my team, and all the coaches are doing the same, with adapting training sessions to an environment that they had with the kit they had at home. And then if you send that out 1 day, 2 days later, there's immediate value. And you, like you said, that word commodity, it's like if you become something in that individual's life that's so essential and so important to them that it becomes a commodity, then it's going to be the last thing you want to get rid of.
So how do you, what is the thing that makes you such a valuable commodity to people?
I think the relationship you can build with clients and the rapport and the level of trust, the value you can give them beyond the coaching process in terms of not just the results, because that realistically at this level, that should be almost, the results should almost be a given. Yeah. That's what we're doing, and that's always the goal. We might not get it the first time, but you're just going to continue pursuing it until you do. But then it's the value outside of that in terms of, you know, especially at this level, and when you're coaching these kind of guys, it's surprising the amount of athletes, IFBB pros, guys at Olympia, who have never been coached in an empathetic manner. And you suddenly start like listening to them and adjusting things based on them speaking to you. And they're like, oh, I've never had this before. Previous coaches told me to get on with it when I told them that.
So how do you manage that bandwidth, that time, you know, to give everybody your time? Because I know you have a lot of people that you work with, and you travel a lot. And you just said to me, you know, before we came on air, that you were 22 countries this year.
Mm.
How do you make, I think this is quite important, how do you make your clients feel that they're the only client?
Just you know, and I'm a firm believer in you having to kind of skew on the side of not managing it before you can then manage it. It's knowing at any given time, even if you're at your most busy, what number or metric can you actually manage effectively and still have an effective response time with and still feel as though you're in control of. And I think some of that comes from the systems that you use. Again, I hate the word systems because it's something that's overused, but like, you know, the coaching sheets that you use, or the efficiency that you can go in and adjust a client's plan and then have them send it, or send a voice note, or send a video, or send a message, whatever it might be. The efficiency that you can turn that around is a big thing, because if I'm at a show in another country and there's a time zone difference and I've got to peak 4 people on the same day or 6 people on the same day, and I've also got 15 other check-ins that are coming in that morning that need to be answered by that given time, how quickly can I actually get through them and how quickly can I change things? But it's just like having the ability to care as well, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's something that was drilled into us at M10, was like, if you're going to coach at this level, especially with Gen Pop, you actually have to show them some level of interest. There's a certain level of, you know, communication and talk and buy-in that you have to have on the gym floor. And it's then using that and encapsulating that level of coaching that is empathetic, because those, like Lynn, for example, remember Lynn?
I do, very well, very well.
If I didn't build that connection with her, she would have never got those results.
No.
Because she wouldn't have had the buy-in.
Broke down a lot of barriers.
She wouldn't have the buy-in. So if you start applying that with these individuals, it's like, it's the same thing that happens.
A big conversation and then around the online world is all to do with how you communicate with your clients. Because in the early days, it was every client's got to have a 10-minute Loom.
Yeah.
And then now it's like, you know, if the client's happy with a voice note, or if the client's happy with a WhatsApp message,
yeah,
it's quite a big conversation out there in the online space. It's like, you're a bad coach if you're doing this, you're a bad coach if you're doing this or not doing this. What's your take on, you deal with hundreds of clients, people ranging from Olympia level right down to Gen Pop. The reality is, what do they need from you as a coach, given the spectrum of how you can communicate with the client?
Yeah, just use the analogy of like being the chameleon in that situation. If you feel as though that client expresses an interest and that's a big buy-in for them and that's important to their journey, then it's something that you're going to deliver. Mm-hmm. I've got many, many clients on the team now that have worked with me for, you know, extended periods of time or short periods of time, where, and that's part of why that materializes relative to not having a set fixed system that you coach with.
Yeah.
They want
a chameleon model.
They want a plan, they want communication, they want a response time, they want an understanding of what they're doing. They don't really care what form it's in, because I'll use the coaching sheet. So if they want to delve in and look at it, then everything's mapped out.
Some people won't even open them.
Some people won't even open them. They'll just want a WhatsApp. And if I send them a video, they'll be like, oh, it's okay, mate, just send me a message.
I haven't got time.
Yeah.
And I think that opens up the whole conversation of, go back to your client.
Yeah.
Are you going to pay me a decent amount of money to work with you? Tell me what's more valuable to you. You know, some of my business clients are like sending me a WhatsApp every couple of days, just wanting to talk to me. And then we could have the best system for them. And they're like, that's cool. That's fine for me.
Yeah.
And you're paying a lot of money for it. And you're like, and I've been mentored in particular ways where I feel like I need more from you. But then it's communicating the right way. What, last question for you. What are you working on?
As a person or as a business?
Let's do both.
Yeah.
Personally and professionally. Because I even had a personal development, my coach worked with me a couple of weeks ago on my areas I continue to work on.
Yeah.
But what's Cal working on personally and professionally to improve his ability to be a leader and as a person right now?
So I think professionally, business-wise, it's, you know, the reality there is I've got a personal ambition to continue growing a list like that year after year and making that better and better and better on a worldwide scale year after year. But then also being in a position where I still want to be in a leadership role, in a managerial role for the team that's around me as well. So I never want it to be just a Cal show, because it doesn't work, especially if you've got people with you. So it's finding a balance between, if I am traveling, then I've still got to make time and budget in time for that essential work commitment as well. So I guess the especially last year as well, the busier I got and the more we traveled and, you know, the more jet lagged you are, the more flights you have to catch, it's still being in a position where that can't be compromised. Because if that's compromised, then the foundations of the business is compromised. And we're also in a position where I can only take on a certain amount of clients, you know, at any given time. And if you're already maxed out, then it doesn't matter if you're getting 150 inquiries a week. I can't do anything with them, because then it's the business is void, really. Because you can only, and we've spoken about this before at M10, where you can only get to a point where you charge so much, and once you hit that relative ceiling of starting to lose the clients that you really want to work with because it's too much, all you can then do is then funnel that out into, I've got this really good coach on my team and they charge this much, and let's refer you out to them. And then the business,
there does come in the bodybuilding physique development world a ceiling.
100%, yeah. 100%. And the irony is, most of the guys that are at the very top level are usually the people that expect
sponsorship.
The sponsorships or the free coaching or the cheaper rates or the discounts.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because everybody wants to work with the top people.
Yeah.
But the top people generally are marketing as opposed to revenue generators.
Yeah.
And I think people have got to get their heads around that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, even some of the lower level coaches, you know, they've not got the money to spend on the coaching.
Yeah.
So there is a ceiling, and I noticed this with my coaching.
Yeah.
You know, it becomes it's not even a challenge, but it's like what you're doing. You've got to scale it eventually to trust other people to work with.
Yeah.
Last thing I just want to say on that is, when you have somebody that wants to work with you, I have so many coaches that are ready to bring a coach on, and they're just terrified because the client always wants them.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that? Because you are in that position where they want to work with you all the time.
I think the start of Pro Coach, one of the main things for me in terms of the vision was being in a position where, you know, I didn't have any direct connotations to me and my name and my face on the brand. And I wanted to get to a point where all the individual coaches and their clients became the face of the brand. And then I was just a contribution to that, because we're in a position where we all want to coach at the same level. And then if we're in a position where they inquire to the brand, then there are multiple coaches and they're all on the same wavelength and skill level and communication level, that you then just get assigned to the most applicable coach for you. Mm-hmm. And on our team, that might come down to who's available at that given time, but then also who's going to be the most applicable going through that system. So, you know, we've hired a personal assistant, we've hired a secretary, we've hired a VA, and all those things then collaborate with the ability for that inquiry to come in and then that client to get assigned in the most efficient manner.
Without having get you involved.
Without having to get me involved. And there'll be clients that come in and I'll be like, oh, I really want to work with that individual. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But then there'll also be, you know, 10 more around that come in that it's great that they've inquired. And that might be off the back of what they've seen one of my results, but they've just got to understand that it's breaking down that barrier because it was much harder at the start. It's less hard now, less difficult now. The standard of service they're going to get and the caliber of coaching they're going to get is uniform across the team. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to be with me, but it's still off the same hymn sheet. And then they'll work with another individual coach, and potentially the initial apprehension is just broken down. Once they've had the first introduction call or the first week of coaching, then they're just part of the coaching roster and we move forwards.
Amazing. Well, listen, Cal, this has been a long overdue catch up.
Yep.
I am incredibly grateful for your time today. It's been great to see you. It brought back a lot of memories having a conversation with you.
Yeah, yeah.
And freaking time flies.
Yeah.
Just for anybody listening and watching, how does anybody come across you, find out about you, follow your journey and smashing the next year and beyond?
Yeah, so just if you type in Pro Coach on social media or Team Pro Coach online, will be the first one that comes up with the website, and then that basically goes through the inquiry process. And then the main platforms for us are Instagram, and there's a little bit on YouTube that's growing, but Instagram's the main one in terms of inquiries and getting in touch and following what's going on.
Well, listen, from the day sitting in the assessment room, in the office,
yeah,
to now, mate, I just love watching your journey, and I just wish you every continued success, mate.
I think that one last thing we'll say is, and this is something that is brought up time and time again, it's the opportunities and the people that you can spend time with that make the difference in terms of your trajectory as a coach and the environments you spend time with. And, you know, you, for me, in the earlier stage of my career, kind of showed me the potential for what was possible, because I wanted to emulate that in terms of the level of coaching and the scalability of the business and where I wanted to be and who I wanted to work with. So that environment and that risk I took to get in that environment was the most influential stepping stone of my career.
Well, I'm so grateful that you actually came to the gym and ended up being a part of it, because for me, you really helped elevate me. James helped elevate me. Josh and all the other coaches in the gym helped elevate me, because, you know, without that environment, for me, realizing my own bodybuilding journey wouldn't have been a possibility. And we've had some great sessions, and I just thank you for your time, bud. Good to see you.
Thank you for inviting me, mate.
Thank you.